Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Yeah, we did. We started to burn too many things we found. This is Harvey Wasserman back here with you again for another hour at the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. Thanks to the crew in New York for putting this on. And thank you for the Jerry Brown, not the governor, who's joining us. Jerry, you with us?
I am, Harvey. Hello.
And you're in Santa Barbara, California. Is that right?
I am.
Good. Well, a smart move, although I've got to tell you, I'm in central Ohio here. It is summer. Everybody doubts global warming, man. It is, I don't know, it's in the, it feels like it's in the 80s today. Hasn't rained. We had one torrential storm, hasn't rained for a long, long time. I assume it's probably even a little cooler in Santa Barbara where you are than it
that
is here because it's by the ocean.
Oh, we need some rain.
You need some rain. Yeah, all of California needs rain. I have a sense that when it does rain in California, it's going to pour. But let's hope for some of it. At any rate, and you are the leader and the founder of the World Business Academy.
That would be my associate, Ronaldo Brutico, who will be joining us.
And Ronaldo, you're with us? Ronaldo, where are you?
Harvey. Nice to meet you.
And where are you? Are you in Santa Barbara as well?
No, today I'm calling in from San Francisco. I'm up here on business, and this call came in for me to take from here, so that's what I'm doing.
Good. So we are going to talk to you two guys about Diablo Canyon, the nuclear plant, some health studies that have come down. And then, Jerry, I hope we have time, Dr. Jerry Brown, to talk about your book about psychedelic
icons. I don't think we'll be talking about that today, Harvey. We really want to focus on the nuclear issue. And I think we saw your papers on climate change. Ronaldo authored a major paper on climate change. Perhaps we could start there, go to the health studies, and then the reason we've sued the State Lands Commission.
Okay, so the State Lands Commission, let's start at the bottom here, and then we'll go back to the top. The State Lands Commission is the government entity in California that recently gave a green light to the relicensing of the Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant. Well, actually, a deal that will not relicense Diablo Canyon, but would allow it if it goes ahead to allow Diablo to operate another 9 years, which is, of course, a catastrophic gamble with our health and safety at a nuclear plant that's surrounded by 12 earthquake faults, but at least that we know of, and 45 miles from the San Andreas, which people are starting to talk seriously as if it's about ready to go off. So let's talk, Ronaldo. Tell us a bit about yourself, Ronaldo, and the nature of this study that you've done on global warming.
Well, thank you, Harvey. It's great to be on your show with you, and Jerry, good to be with you again on the phone. The issues about climate change, in my background, are I'm an attorney by training, and I'm an economist, and for many years I've been a merchant banker. So I've been active in business, still am somewhat active in business, and founded the Academy in 1986 as a way to put a nonprofit in the middle of a very dynamic conversation, which I thought needed to happen, on how business could take responsibility for the whole society. So how we could be seen as people who are doing our best to help society rather than being in the position of looking like predators, because sometimes historically we've been that way. And in the process of looking at all the ways that business could help society and make a fair profit in the process, because I am a business guy, we looked at many different issues. Jerry has been a fellow of the Academy for over two decades, and we started a thing about almost two decades ago now, looking at energy. At the time, we were just looking at peak oil and what that meant, and then we segued into renewable energy. And then because Jerry and I have done a book that Simon & Schuster published as a college textbook on nuclear energy, we got more and more involved in the nuclear question. And as we've looked at all of these issues, one of the things that kept coming back to us over and over again was, oh my goodness, it's much bigger than an economic system change when you're talking about fossil fuels. You're talking about whether or not humanity, as whether human civilization can survive climate change. So we started looking at what the underpinning was of climate change. And the one thing, quick, I could make an observation for you and your listeners, that if they've seen the book or the movie Inconvenient Truth that Gore did, they might be familiar with what's called the hockey stick, which depicts how fast temperatures will rise as CO2 has built up over the millennium, and particularly in the last couple hundred years since the Industrial Revolution. You just complained at the beginning of the show about how hot it is in Ohio. It's about 5 degrees above normal in Santa Barbara as well today. So that heat, Gore in his book said, is a direct result of CO2 buildup, which has occurred as a result of fossil fuels. When we looked at that data, we said, oh, my God, as scary as the hockey stick is. Harvey, you know what I mean by the hockey stick, that graph, right? The graph?
Yeah, I do, but why don't you explain it to our listeners, if you would, please.
Okay, what the hockey stick shows is that there's been a gradual accumulation of carbon dioxide, which is a heat gas, a greenhouse gas. It's been going on since the Industrial Revolution, but the heat result of that, of those CO2 emissions has started accelerating so fast that the rise of heat is going to be almost straight up. As we approach the bend, the elbow of the graph, which shows how it was building up over time, we're now past the bend in the elbow. We're now going almost straight up with heat. That's why it's inconceivable that we will be able to hold the heat rise to 2 degrees Celsius. It's not even possible at this point, let alone 1.5. So I celebrate Obama's enthusiasm yesterday that the Paris Accord is now in effect, and by November, countries will start to track their goals on climate change, and they'll start to track the measures they take and how well they work. But the real problem that Jerry and I discovered, and the rest of the team in our task force on energy at the Academy, the World Business Academy, we noticed that there was a bigger threat than CO2, and that's methane. The release of methane is now a bigger cause of heating in the atmosphere than is carbon dioxide. So I'm going to make a very stunning statement to you. For those who've seen the hockey stick, which is this graph that shows how imperiled human society is from heat buildup from CO2, that's what Gore wrote about. And I'm going to tell you that that is probably not even the biggest problem we've got, because if we went to zero CO2 emissions tomorrow morning, which isn't going to happen, tomorrow there'll be more CO2 released than there was yesterday. But if we went to zero tomorrow morning, it's too late, because the heat that CO2 has trapped is now releasing so much methane, and I'll explain, if you like, how it's releasing methane. But methane is being gurgled up from the bottom of the oceans in massive quantities. It's coming out of the permafrost in such large quantities. There are literally craters in Siberia where the snow has been blown away by the expansion of methane gas as it rises. That's the real threat to human civilization. And you can stop doing CO2 emissions by changing off of fossil fuels, which we recommend we should be doing, because that's like putting gas on the fire, but that's not putting the fire out. It's too late for that. The fire, you know, a forest fire spreads, right? It starts with a little spark or whatever, and the wind picks up, and the heat of the fire then causes other combustion to occur, and it spreads like crazy. We're particularly acutely aware of this in the West, because we have the fires all the time. What I'd like people to realize is that there is now a component, methane, which is causing the heating of the atmosphere to accelerate so fast that CO2 is no longer the problem. And we are literally threatening human civilization as you know it. And it's not going to take 50 years for that threat to manifest itself. It's going to take 25 or 30. So everybody listening to this who is under the age of 60, you are looking at the end of human civilization as you know it, unless we take immediate steps. I'll be happy to talk about what the steps are, because we can solve this problem. But if we don't wake up to the size of the problem, we're in deep yogurt. I'll add one other factor, and then I'd be happy to take a question or comment from Jerry. In addition to methane release, which is enormous, and we can talk about how it's happening and why it's happening and why it's building on itself, like a forest fire, it's growing, accelerating, we have a thing called the albedo effect. I don't know if your listeners know what that is, but when sunlight comes to the planet Earth and strikes an ice mass, whether it's the Arctic, the Antarctic, or a glacier, over 80% of that sunlight gets radiated back into space. So the heat isn't trapped here. When there is no ice there because the glacier melted, which is a problem globally, or where there's no ice there because the Arctic has lost so much ice that there are cruise ships now going through what was the impenetrable inland passage, as you know. Well, that sunlight that then strikes the water or land causes accelerated heating. And the more it heats, the fewer glaciers there are, the less ice in the Arctic, et cetera, et cetera. So what we have is what some people call a positive feedback loop. I call it a negative feedback loop. We have the damage we've done is now doing more damage to us than even the continuing damage we're doing. So I'll just pause there for a minute to let the enormity of what I said settle in. And you only got two choices when somebody says something like I said. You either got to say this guy's a complete crackpot, or, oh my gosh, it's Paul Revere, and he's trying to warn us the British are coming. You only got two choices.
Okay, yeah, that's clear enough. Jerry Brown, do you want to add to that?
Yeah, you know, Rinaldo's deep knowledge on this issue comes from many years of study. And when Dr. Jim Hansen, the former head of NASA, came out and touted nuclear power as a solution, a significant part of the solution, if not the solution to climate change, Rinaldo sent him a letter, a very detailed, long letter, outlining why that is not so. We never at the Academy heard back from Dr. Hansen, and so Rinaldo published his letter openly, which can be found on our website, www.worldbusiness.org. And if you Google nuclear power, you'll find a paper that said, Unqualified to Combat Climate Change. We believe this is the most technically detailed response to the big lie of nuclear power, which has repackaged itself as the solution to climate change. And on page 10 of that paper, that white paper on climate change, we quote Alvin Weinberg, who is a former director of Oak Ridge National Laboratory, who totally dispels this myth because he says that in order to make a serious dent in carbon emissions, it would take perhaps four times as many reactors suggested by even MIT, or up to 4,000 new reactors in a relatively short period of time. Well, at $12 to $15 billion a reactor, and at, you know, 10 to 15 years to construct, it's just not an unreal. It's not a realistic scenario. So basically, it's a severe problem, and basically, those who are advocating themselves as you know, green nuclear advocates, or saying that nuclear power is the solution, are quite misled, both factually and in terms of doing a service to the future.
But, Jerry, let me just tag on something on that. So whereas I think Hansen is a great climate scientist, and where I know that he knows that what I just told you about the end of human civilization is in front of us imminently, it scares the bejesus out of him, and it should. If you knew what I know and what he knows, you'd be crazy if you weren't scared to death. The problem is acting out of fear to reach for a solution which would be worse than the problem you've got. It isn't going to solve the problem you've got because you're fearful. Is the worst possible thing we can do. We can't afford to get distracted by the folly of nuclear energy. So we can talk about nuclear energy and why it's not the answer to climate change. We can talk about climate change and what we got to do about it. But what we can't see is we can't let people conflate that somehow more nuclear energy solves climate when, in fact, it's the reverse. So what we have to do is be sure we should be frightened, as Hansen is, about climate change. But what we should be talking about are realistic solutions that can be implemented and that won't create toxic residues for 10,000 years and, frankly, won't emit every day highly toxic radioactive isotopes that are giving us cancer all over the country. So I'm not sure where you'd like to go with the interview, Ari, but I'll tell you this. Climate change is something we're really familiar with at the Academy, and we're really familiar with nuclear. And if people listening to this don't want nuclear power plants in their town, they probably ought to get a hold of us and take a look at our website, worldbusiness.org. We've been around since 1986. We're not a secret. And the quality of our scholarship and the books we write has never been questioned by the best business schools literally in the world. So I'm not talking about something here that's theoretical. I'm talking about a real risk from climate change, and I'm talking about a really crazy belief that somehow nuclear is the answer. I don't know which way you want to take the conversation, but those are the two premises that I have that should not be conflated.
Well, let's confirm a couple of things. First of all, I just had an article published at progressive.org, which is at the PRN website as well, carried by reader-supported news around the Internet, basically pointing out that nuclear power reactors are carbon emitters. All nuclear power reactors do emit carbon-14, and the fuel that's created to burn in a nuclear power plant is totally bound up with carbon. Technically, the fuel doesn't emit much carbon. It does emit carbon-14. But the bottom line is that the mining... is somebody messing with their phone there? The mining, the milling, and the enrichment of nuclear fuel is a major source of carbon emissions. And then, of course, you have the heat that comes with all nuclear power reactors. I always get these trolls on the Internet who say that when I talk about heat coming from a nuclear plant, I don't understand global warming. It seems to me that the heat coming out of Diablo Canyon and other nuclear reactors kind of eliminates the middleman. They're all talking about carbon dioxide, but they are, one way to heat the planet is to heat the planet. And when you put a billion and a quarter gallons of hot water into the ocean, 20 degrees hotter than normal, seems to me that is a source of global warming. Maybe I'm naive, but let's talk. We can go two ways, and I want to start first with the continued bad news about nuclear power. Jerry Brown, Dr. Jerry Brown at the World Business Academy, you have discussed with me by email a study deals with the infant death rates and the cancer rates around the Diablo Canyon nuclear reactor at San Luis, reactors or two there at San Luis Obispo, California. Can you tell us about these studies?
Yes. Back in 2014, the World Business Academy commissioned Joe Mangano, a U.S.-based epidemiologist, to look at what the health patterns were before in San Luis Obispo County and northern Santa Barbara, before Diablo Canyon opened in the mid-'80s, and in the decades that followed. Joe's report, which looked at rising strontium-90 levels in baby teeth in California, looked at cancer rates, found that in these decades, from when the plant opened, San Luis Obispo County, compared to the rest of California, changed from a relatively low cancer county to a high cancer county. There were increases in thyroid cancer, breast cancer, melanoma. And these data are available on a county level. However, in terms of infant health, California presents the infant health in terms of low birth weight, which means potential for illness, and infant mortality, the number of babies who die in the first year, and extreme infant mortality, the number of babies who die in the first month of life. They present those by zip codes. So we said to Mangano, we said, look at the zip codes downwind right near of Diablo Canyon and in San Luis Obispo County, and look at control counties away from the pattern of radiation. It is very important for your listeners to understand we're not talking about Fukushima. We're not talking about Three Mile Island. We're not talking about high-level spent fuel. We are talking about the routine, normal, federally permitted radiation releases of radiation from every nuclear power plant in the country that the NRC allows, the EPA allows, and these are monitored. These are reported. We believe that these radiations decrease infant health. Joe's study found that all of our hypotheses, and here the good news is the bad news, all of our hypotheses were confirmed in terms of increasing cancer rates, in terms of deteriorating infant health, and this was trackable by zip codes. Now, mind you, in the 30 years that this plant has been operating, the NRC, the San Luis Obispo Department of Health, and PG&E, the owner and operator of Diablo Canyon, never did a health study. After this study was published, or was released to the public, Joe came back and he said, oh, look at this. In 2010 to 2014, these infant death rates are soaring in San Luis Obispo County. So we then commissioned one of the most eminent radiation chemists in the world, the UK-based Dr. Chris Busby, to look at the specific pattern of infant death rates around Diablo Canyon, both in the zip codes near the radiation releases, in inland control zip codes away from the radiation releases, and compared to the rest of California. And what Busby found was that there was a very significant increase, and I'll quote, a remarkable and statistically significant 28% overall increase in infant mortality rates in the radiation group, end of quote, relative to the inland control group. What we're talking about, Harvey, when you extrapolate these for the future of the plant, and when we look at the cancers that could be prevented, we are literally talking about over 100 infant deaths that could be prevented and 500 cancers that could be prevented if Diablo Canyon were closed today rather than to wait another 9 years. This plant's life is over. It's a question of everybody knows that, and we are advocating the plant should be closed now. This study by Dr. Chris Busby was recently published on September 14, 2016, in the Jacobs Journal of Epidemiology and Preventive Medicine, which is a peer-reviewed scientific journal. So this is the gold standard, and Busby found there was a direct correlation between these infant deaths and the cumulative publicly reported tritium releases from Diablo Canyon from 1989 to 2012. So the bottom line here is that on top of the seismic, on top of the marine damage from Diablo Canyon and many other unusual circumstances, which Ronaldo will talk about when we get to the lawsuit, closing Diablo Canyon would save lives now and into the future.
So, you know, as a segue, Harvey, just to take what he said there, what Jerry just said, you need to know that on June 28th, we submitted these findings to the State Lands Commission. And we said, you know, Busby's the best that we know of in the world. That's who we went to. And Joe Mangano's report is scary, but we kept going because we wanted to know. If we have made a mistake, if our data is wrong, you owe it to us as the people of the state of California. You need to find out if we're wrong. And the only way you're going to do that is if you have an environmental impact report on that plant. Because, you know, I don't want to think that this data, which is chilling, we're talking about 100 dead children and 500 cancers, and then you're talking, not even counting what happens to the adult cancer rates, which are huge. If that is true data, and it is, we can't find a flaw in it, and the journal that it was peer-reviewed and published in has stood behind it now. So if that's true, as best we know, doesn't the state of California owe us to check and find out? I'd love to know I'm wrong, because I'd like to not kill those kids. But if, in fact, that does withstand scrutiny, of course you got to close the plant. So the only way to know whether to close the plant or not is to do an EIR, and that's what the State Lands Commission refused to do. And I think they refused to do it because they know they couldn't survive it. That's my guess.
Well, all right. And I have had people on, a number of people, and I've done a number of shows on Diablo Canyon, and we will continue to until the damn thing is shut. But will you please explain, either one of you, for our listeners, update on exactly what the EIR is, what the circumstances were, and tell us the basis of your lawsuit and where it's been filed in terms of the legal system.
Sure, I'll take that, Jerry. So the lawsuit was filed in Los Angeles Superior Court at the offices of the State Lands Commission. The specific gravamen of the suit is that the State Lands Commission exceeded its legal statutory authority by acting in an arbitrary and capricious way to refuse to examine whether the testimony that was provided to them and the studies that were offered to them, in fact, would require an environmental impact report or not. They took the position, which is, I believe, wrong under California law. There's a Supreme Court case in 2015 where the court talks about these kinds of cases and indicates that when there is this kind of a question, even if it's not proven, if it's just a question, the state has an obligation to investigate. So the environmental impact report that we have asked for, that we were denied, we said, please investigate and see what the environmental impacts of Diablo Canyon are with regard to radiation releases and cancer, infant mortality, seismic risk, and other issues relating to, including the water temperature going in. In fact, we even threw in the fact that they were operating illegally a desalinization plant that was dumping brine in the shore. So we said, look, you need to look at these things and see what the environmental impacts are. That's your statutory duty. And that they refused to do that. But they said, well, we don't need to do that. We're going to rely on an exception that says we don't have to when we don't want to. We sued them in Superior Court in Los Angeles saying, no, you don't have any option. You must do it. And to say you don't have to do it in the face of these allegations is arbitrary and capricious and beyond your statutory authority. And we're asking the court to force the State Lands Commission to do the environmental impact report. Look at the effects to the environment of the continued operation of Diablo Canyon. That's what the suit's asking.
Is this a state court or a federal?
It's a state court because the law that governs environmental impact reports in California is called CEQA, which is the California Environmental Quality Act. So we're asking for enforcement of CEQA, the California Environmental Quality Act. So you have to go to a California court to get them to enforce a California statute.
So what will happen if you win this lawsuit? What are the implications for the continued operation of the Diablo Canyon nuclear plant if you win and force the State Lands Commission to force them to do an EIS?
So if they have to do the EIR, Environmental Impact Report, if they have to do that report, two things happen. Number one, they will be forced to look at the radiation data that Jerry was referring to, both as to infant mortality and to other forms of cancer. They'll be forced to look at why the downwind from Diablo Canyon has radically higher rates of cancer than other places in the state of California that are similarly rural. They'll have to look at whether or not there's a risk that there are at least six active fault lines, two of which go almost directly under the plant that Diablo sits on. They'll have to look at the fact that Diablo sits in an area which has already been inundated with a tsunami. They'll have to look at the fact that the fault line off the Diablo coast, the fault line itself is called a subduction fault. It's precisely what got Fukushima is a subduction fault, because that particular fault is known to create tsunamis. So you've got all these issues that have to be examined if they're going to continue to operate the plant, and they're going to have to get that examination completed before the existing permits run out in 2018 that the State Lands Commission had originally granted them. So the second thing that could happen if we win the suit, and I expect we will, if they take and drag their feet too long in getting to that decision, the Pacific Gas and Electric Company, the real party in interest, PG&E, and the state will be stuck in the position of saying, how are we going to get an environmental impact report done quick enough to keep it operational? And the answer is, that's their problem. They're going to just have to close the plant down until the EIR is done. And if the EIR comes back negative, then they're not going to be able to reopen it.
And Harvey, this is Jerry, if I may. The specifics of that are that Diablo Canyon has a lease from the California State Lands Commission. It has two leases. One will expire in 2018, the other in 2019. One for the intake, the giant intake valve, which takes in 2.5 billion gallons of water a day, that provides the core cooling water, that provides operational water. This water is desalinated. It provides emergency core cooling water. So obviously, without that lease covering the tidelands, Diablo Canyon will not be able to take in that water. It does not have cooling towers. It has this once-through ocean water cooling system. And the plant will no longer be able to operate, and it will close. Now, in the joint proposal, which you're familiar with, you had Linda Seeley from Mothers for Peace and John Giesman from the Alliance for Nuclear Responsibility on your show, talking about this joint proposal that was signed on by Friends of the Earth, Natural Resources Defense Committee, PG&E, the labor unions, that said, we're going to close the plant in 2025. That was great from the Academy point of view because it accomplished three things. It said Diablo Canyon's power is not necessary. It can be closed. Number two, we're going to protect the workforce. And number three, it can be replaced by renewable energy. These are huge admissions for one of the largest utilities in the United States.
And by the way, Jerry, it also said that we the Academy put this in the deal. It has to protect the people who work at the plant, so they'll be rehired in similar jobs, whether they're union or non-union. So it took care of the labor too.
Yeah. So basically, under that scenario, the joint proposal from PG&E and the others was contingent upon new leases, the old leases being voided, and these new leases being issued by the State Lands Commission to run on concomitant to 2025 when the NRC license expires. All of this happened at the June 28th meeting here in California of the State Lands Commission. And a lot of people went home and sang Kumbaya, and they said, oh, Diablo Canyon's finally going to close. We, because of all of these pressing environmental issues and because of being acutely aware of the health effects and the infant deaths that will occur and the cancers that will continue to occur, are the last group standing who have said, this cannot stand. And therefore, the Academy sued the State Lands Commission, as Rinaldo described. If the court rules in our favor, then these new leases would become void because they would not be able to be issued until the EIR is completed. And if that EIR is not done by 2018, because the old leases would be in effect, then no cooling water leases, the plant would have to close.
Well, what are your chances in front of the court? How many members on the court, who appointed them, and what kind of track record does this report
We're not at the appeal court. We're right now at the Superior Court in Los Angeles. So we're in the pretrial stages of a trial that will happen in L.A. Superior Court. If you want to know my guess, if things go well, Harvey, I think this is going to take 9 months to get the trial and be resolved. And after that, if PG&E loses, which I think they will at the trial court, I'm certain they will try to appeal it. If they appeal,
and where would
they
go
to
where
a three-judge panel? They would appeal to the three-judge panel that takes cases upward from Los Angeles.
Do you have a federal remedy if you fail in the state courts?
Well, I think our state court remedy is actually better because the federal government, the problem you have with the federal government is the arguments that they will make under a federal preemption on behalf of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, who, as you know, the NRC, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, has never seen a nuclear power plant it didn't love, even ones that it knew was broken. I mean, Diablo, for example, is the number one most troublesome plant to them on their list of 100 reactors. And yet they'll fight tooth and nail if they can to keep it open. So the issue really isn't a federal issue yet. I think it's a state issue. And in fact, the way I look at it is the state of California has an obligation to its citizens under its police powers, which the federal government agrees is the carve out for preemption. Under our police powers, we're supposed to take care of the health, safety, and well-being of the residents of the state of California. That's our job as a state. That's what we say they're violating. So we're really going to the heart of the beast here. We're saying if California is in the job of protecting the health and welfare of its citizens, it must force its government to take the actions that are appropriate that aren't arbitrary and capricious, and that's why we have an environmental impact law in the first place called CEQA. I think it's very important for your listeners to realize that what we're asking for is something the legislature tried to create, and through a back door, PG&E is trying to eliminate. And I want to throw one other thing on the fire here. PG&E is the only company in America that has been convicted of criminal felonies, because it engaged in the careless disregard of the welfare and well-being of the people of California when they blew up half of San Bruno. And they're still paying billions on that one. So this is the same company that has been found guilty of felonies. And that company is once again disregarding the health and well-being of the people of the state of California in order to maximize their profits over the next 9 years. even though we believe they are killing children and creating untold numbers of cancers for adults as well. That's just not right. And I appealed to the PG&E people. I said, you know, yes, you're running a company, but the World Business Academy is in favor of companies making a profit by taking care of society, not by doing this to it. And you've got children, you've got grandchildren, you've got nieces and nephews. Come on, as a human being, how can you tolerate the fact that this might be true? Wouldn't you want
You have to remember the corporations, despite the Citizens United decision, corporations are not actually human beings. And yeah, you're dealing with a corporation here, not with so many people who are making decisions based on human need. A corporation has no response to human need other than to try and circumvent it in court. So this is a fascinating discussion.
But there are humans that run them. And I'm appealing to the human that runs them. I'm saying, look, as a human being, if it's even remotely possible, and we're looking at peer-reviewed published studies that say it's happening, but if it was even a possibility, Harvey, as a human being, in your heart, with compassion, wouldn't you want to know?
But you have to remember that it's actually illegal, and you guys can jump in on this. You're both lawyers, I believe. Jerry, are you a lawyer?
No, I'm not a lawyer.
But Ronaldo, you are an attorney. Under the law, a corporation is required to do only one thing, and that is to make a profit. And
that's not true, and I am going to jump in on that. That is absolutely not
please
true.
Please do.
Yeah, no.
Well,
first of all, you have a duty, it's called a fiduciary duty to your shareholders. I also sit on large company, public company boards. I'm very involved with corporations at all levels. And if you are involved with a company that makes a short-term decision, blow up San Bruno, that's a violation of your fiduciary duty to take care of the best long-term interests of the shareholders, because that's not good for them. And running Diablo Canyon is not in the best interest of the shareholders of PG&E. Now, we could come up with a settlement proposal, Harvey, where they could maximize the benefit to their shareholders and maximize the health benefits of the state of California. But to do that, they've got to be willing to say, okay, we're going to do what's reasonable. Now, to go to your specific point that only making a profit is all corporations are required to do, why that's not true, and I would love to get a whole other hour with you on this subject, because I'm a student of the history of how corporations came into being, starting with the salt monopoly under Louis XIV. And what they were given was they were given the right to do business in return for doing something for society, and they were usually always sunsetted, meaning they only lasted for a certain number of years, and then they would terminate. So that's how people landed at Jamestown. That was a corporation. That's how Hudson Bay Company did Canada. And their patent or their right to operate for the crown expired over a period of years. When we formed the United States of America, we actually gave that power to the individual states. And the reason we did that is we said the best place to judge whether the companies are doing the best thing by civilization or society is to put it at the local level where people will watch what they do. So we'll let the states decide how long a corporation should exist. And all companies in America until the 50s were required to state what their public benefit purpose was in order to continue doing business. So we've gotten away from that, and we forgot.
They are no longer required to do that.
No, they're not. But I'm saying to you, their history is that they were created as special adjuncts of the state, and I couldn't agree with you more. Citizens United is crazy. They are not people. But they are allowed to operate, and they're given all kinds of special benefits under the law because theoretically they're doing something for society. We didn't say to Jean Lafitte the pirate, come on in and we'll let you do whatever you want to rip and rape. What we said is to Jean Lafitte the pirate, if you will help us defend New Orleans, we'll let you go free. So in other words, there's a trade-off in society. Business must step up and act responsibly. You know, business is the only force on the planet that's strong enough that together with government can stop climate change. And we've got to get business looking at that target. And by the way, it'll make them a lot of money, more money than they're making now. So
all right, let's talk about that now.
Harvey, let me jump in
Let's jump in now. We're running out. We're gonna be kind of short on time. We got 20 minutes left. Jerry, I'll let you speak your piece, but I do want to segue now into the renewable green alternatives to Diablo and how we can realistically force ecologically and economically the shutdown of this obsolete and inefficient reactor. But, Jerry, you had something to say in between.
Yeah, I just want to, and it won't take me long, is that just to step back from the issue, since this is California law, CEQA, the California Environmental Quality Act, the ultimate remedy is with the California Supreme Court to enforce the law, which they've already done in related incidents of decision, which is why we have a high level of confidence that the Academy will prevail in this lawsuit against the State Lands Commission. But as you are well aware, and as Rinaldo and I documented in our 1997 book, Profiles in Power, The Anti-Nuclear Movement and the Dawn of the Solar Age, which was published by Simon & Schuster, that the anti-nuclear movement has never won at the federal level or at Congress. I mean, the nuclear industry, the Nuclear Energy Institute, they're just too powerful there. So where you have seen victories, such as in WIPS in Washington, D.C., the ending of that fiasco and that bond meltdown there, where you've seen the stopping of Shoreham, which at that time at $7 billion was the most expensive plant in Long Island, and that plant never became operational. This was done either at the local county level or at the state level. And this is what this is all about. The other thing that we document in this book is that every time a scientist, even a major scientist like John Goffman, has come up with evidence that nuclear power will harm and kill people, the nuclear industry has defamed them, defrocked them, and defunded them. And that's documented in our book. And as the last point I'd like to make, one of the great ironies of all of this is that in 2015, the nuclear industry, the NRC, pulled the plug on a study where they had funded the National Academy of Sciences to look into the possible cancers growing around the cancer incidents and mortalities in connection with U.S. nuclear facilities, complaining about budget constraints. Now, let's just pause, and I'll end here, to look at the hypocrisy of this. The nuclear industry canceled an $8 million study to find out if their 10 to 12, they can build a plant for 10 to 12 or $15 billion, but they can't spend $8 million to find out if those plants are harming the people, the workers, and the citizens that live around them. So if we're going to win this, we're going to win it at the California state level, not at the federal level.
Well, as someone who went into central Pennsylvania in the year after the accident at Three Mile Island, I believe the only other reporter was Anna Mayo, the wonderful Anna Mayo. I haven't seen any other reporters that did that, but you know, I documented the death rates around Three Mile Island, and I still hear from, you know, mainstream reporters, corporate reporters, who never set foot near a nuclear plant to do any interviews, that nobody died there. I mean, animals died in droves, people died in droves, with the relatively small releases of Three Mile Island. And, excuse me, there's no doubt that the releases at Diablo Canyon are killing people. So, excuse me, to proceed from there, let's thank you for that study, by the way, and thank you for filing the lawsuit. I'm glad someone did. You said you were the last folks standing. I think the Mothers for Peace are still involved with you on this work. I hope so, anyway. Is that not the case? Aren't the Mothers for Peace still fighting this deal to keep Diablo open?
The Mothers for Peace are not involved in the lawsuit with us. They have entered the CPUC proceeding about related to the shutdown of Diablo Canyon and the renewables that will replace it. The Mothers for Peace have been fighting Diablo since it opened, and we hope that, we have the greatest respect for their work, but we're the group that has taken the lead to file before the State Lands Commission because we believe that's going to be the most effective way to close this plant in the near term rather than wait until 2025 and debate that whole issue before the Public Utilities Commission.
I'm glad you're doing it, and thank you very much. It's an incredibly important function you're serving. You have all my support and whatever I can do to help, and others listening in, I'm sure. Give us a website where people can contact you and send support and look in on what you're doing.
Worldbusiness.org, just worldbusiness.org. And please
let us know you're interested in the fight, because it gets kind of lonely out there being David, and there's a lot of Goliaths we're dealing with.
Yeah, but there's a lot of Davids, too. I mean, you know, I've been doing this since 1973, and we have been winning. I mean, let's face it. When we first started, there were going to be 1,000 nukes in the United States. Yep. That's what Richard Nixon wanted, which translates, by the way, to about, on population basis, to 100 in California. Can you imagine if there had been 100 commercial reactors built in California? It's a nightmare. I can't even begin to think of. Diablo are the last two that are remaining. I do think we have a good chance to shut them. I do think we can short-circuit this nine-year nightmare that we have. And of course, there's no guarantee at the end of the day that PG&E would even shut Diablo after the 9 years, but we'll see how that goes. And I am totally in support of this lawsuit. It's a very, very important function, and I'm with you all the way, and I hope it succeeds.
Yeah. And so Harvey, you are a David, and what I was saying is all the Davids out there that are listening, like you, who are interested in this issue, go to our website, because the more of us that we know that are out there, the stronger we are together. So please go to the website, worldbusiness.org. That was my point. And I'd be delighted I'd love to talk about the replacement energy, because I'm making a statement right now that is absolutely bald but true. We can, first of all the Diablo energy is considered surplus by the California Independent System Operator, who's in charge of the California grid. But all of the energy we need from Diablo can be replaced, and then some, with renewables. We at the Academy have been pioneering two specific ways to do that. So one of them is called the microgrid, which is to take and create energy where you need it. So you make the energy where you use it, rather than making it some distant place like Diablo and then send it down the wires hundreds of miles away. So we're going back with our research to the very first debate between Thomas Edison and what would become of what now we know of as direct current, and Nikola Tesla, who stood for the principle of alternating current because he wanted to do long-distance transmission. We believe the best kind of energy is that which you make from 100% renewable sources closest to where you use it. So that means solar, it means wind, it means geothermal, and it means some other things that are now being advanced, such as underwater tidal, et cetera. When you've got those kinds of energy resources, which are vast in their ability, all you need to do is balance it with the appropriate amount of storage. And what a microgrid is, and it can be as small as a single office building, or it can be as large as, we've designed one that goes all the way from Ventura to Goleta, which is over 100,000 people live there. And we've designed one that's done in a modular fashion, step by step by step, across that entire area, where the integration of storage and generation is done right there locally where it's all used. That's called the microgrid. And listen for it, because your listeners will be listening to what's going to happen in the next 10 years of the energy future. Right now, for example, the nation of India, and we've had some influence on this decision, has decided to launch, they now have 6 microgrids in India. And the Prime Minister of India, Modi, has come to realize that that's the future for India, not opening more coal-fired plants. So micro generation, micro use, distributed out to where people use it, that's called a microgrid. And that's one solution. There are some others I can talk about, but that's one right there. And there's plenty of energy. The sun striking the earth every day creates tons. The question is how to balance it so you can use it at night when the sun's not shining, how you can do it with wind and balance it. But I'll tell you one thing real interesting about that people don't know about Diablo, which is right today there are wind farms in California that get turned off in order to protect Diablo's ability to sell power at full rate. And Diablo,
yeah, it's outrageous.
It's outrageous, and it's expensive, by the way, and it's creating toxic residues we'll be dealing with for 1,000 years. It's the most expensive energy in the world, and it's insane. And somebody's got to say the emperor's got no clothes, and you're doing it, and we're doing it. But your readers need to know, for example, the white paper that Jerry referred to. It's not that long. We'll give you a free copy, folks. Read it, and you'll know everything you need to know about why nuclear is crazy. If you want to know what the best alternatives are in renewables, we'll be happy to talk to you. We'll be happy to talk to you about the future of the hydrogen economy and why the hydrogen economy will replace the fossil fuel economy. And we'll be glad to talk to you about how microgrids are the in-between step. So we're happy to talk about all that and any of it.
Right. Right. And let's point out that, you know, this whole jobs argument, there are about roughly 1,000 people allegedly employed at the two reactors at Diablo Canyon. And much has been made about the transition for them. And as you mentioned, this deal that was cut, I've done a couple of shows on it, between the environmental groups and the union and the company and the state, is path-breaking because they do take care of the workers. But to put it in perspective, there's 1,000 people working at Diablo Canyon. There's 65,000 people working in the solar industry in California. And nationwide, there's almost 90,000 working in wind. Overall, in the United States, and I just got done looking this up, there are over 200,000 people working in the solar energy industry and another 88,000 to 90,000 people working in the wind business, as opposed to the entire nuclear power industry, which has about 100,000 people in it, and the coal business, which has, I believe it's less than 60 now. Yeah. And so we have combined between wind and solar some 300,000 Americans at work and about 150 or 160 in coal and nukes. So this is obviously where the future of employment in this country is going
to
be.
You're absolutely right here, Harvey. And the kind of the proof in the pudding, if you look to Germany, which has already closed half its nuclear plants and is phasing out the rest of them very rapidly, they are a solar and a wind powerhouse, and there is only one industry in the German economic powerhouse that employs more people than the renewable energy industry. That's the auto industry. So the jobs are there. Every major study shows that a dollar invested in renewable energy will generate 3 to 4 to 5 times more jobs than a dollar invested in nuclear or fossil fuels. The other thing that I would ask you to look very closely at in that joint proposal is the worker protection. In the fine print of those 1,000 or 1,200 workers, the only workers who are truly protected are those that are going to be involved in the decommissioning, the security, the spent fuel pool maintenance of that plant, which might be, if we take San Onofre, which closed, as we know, several years ago, as a measure, about 400 workers. The rest of the workers, the language is very vague. We at the World Business Academy, both for moral and for economic reasons, because we think the workers' tax benefits to the communities and their families are very important, we are calling for 100% legal protection for all of the union and the non-union workers who are there, either directly at jobs at Diablo Canyon, lateral placement into the 200,000 jobs that exist in PG&E, and in new businesses that should replace Diablo Canyon in a high-tech future for San Luis Obispo. Fuel cell manufacturing, solar manufacturing, dry cast storage.
Let me add one thing to that, Jerry, too, because we're almost out of time. And Harry, I want you to know and I can say this with all due humility, we were the lead group of 15, 16 environmental groups that hammered out that final settlement. And we dropped out 2 weeks before the settlement, because the only thing we couldn't get was the kind of worker protection that we're now describing, because PG&E wanted to water it down, and we didn't want that. And the second thing we couldn't get was the environmental impact report. We said, look, we got to have that. You can't not check and see if this is doing damage and killing people. And when we refused to do that, they said, if you don't agree to give up your right to sue us, we're not going to include you in the final announcement. And I said, what do you mean? You think I'm going to trade what I know is right for a press release? Of course I'm not going to give up our right to sue, because I am going to sue you if you sign that deal. So 2 weeks before it got done, we got cut out of it because we were holding the line. We had hoped that there would be more pushback than there was, but I'm very delighted to say of the 16 environmental groups that Jerry and I both know were involved in that, only 3 of them really got involved with the settlement. 3 or 4.
Well, good for you guys. It's a great thing. I think the fact that the settlement happened is a good thing because it laid down the principle that a power company has agreed that the power from a nuke can be provided by renewables, and it did lay down the principle
that there should be something done for the workers and for the local community, by the way, to transition out of that. But beyond that, I'm really glad you guys are suing these guys. I hope you get them in jail as soon as you possibly can after what they did at San Bruno. I'm glad you did this study. It's spectacular. And your work at the World Business Academy has been terrific. And I want to recruit you now, finally. I am actually moving to Los Angeles, and I want to turn Los Angeles into a solartopia. And I would like to work with you guys so we can do a plan, a visual plan, that I will write up to show exactly how Los Angeles can become the world's first solar megalopolis. And California
here.
Solar.
Hey, Harvey, count me in. Count me in.
All right, buddy. So the three of us will work together on California Solartopia. I want to have slides. I want to have a book illustrating how Los Angeles, between microgrids and rooftop solar, can be turned 100% energy self-sufficient. So let's work on that one. I'm going to be flying into Burbank next week. I'm going to look down and see all those flat roofs that don't have solar panels on them. And I want, in our lifetime, within the next decade, to have every flat roof in Los Angeles covered with solar panels. So let's make that into our next minor project. How about that, guys?
Hey, it's a great project. And, you know, are you aware that the Department of Water and Power was instructed on September 16th by the City Council of Los Angeles to develop a plan to get to 100% green? Are you aware of that?
No, and I think they need to be pushed. And, you know, the LADWP is a 10% owner in the three reactors at Palo Verde. And that's got to end as soon as possible. And they got to stop the restrictions that they have on the capacity of solar that you can put on your house. That's a big deal. I have a house in the Valley now, and my wife and I, when we had the guys come out to look at solar, they said it had to be tied not to how much solar we could generate, but how much power we use. We are done. Last time, what's the worldbusinessacademy.org, right?
Worldbusiness.org, no academy. We are the World All Business right. Academy. It's worldbusiness.org.
Ronaldo and Jerry, thanks so much. We'll have you back. No nukes.
Thanks.